Chapter 5. Possession. As long as the Inari had food for contemplation, he cared very little for the deficiencies in his surroundings. Or, it might rather be said, he felt, in the sum total of beauty about him, an ownership of appreciation that left him free from the fret of personal desire. Mrs. Peyton had cultivated to excess this disregard of material conditions. But she now began to ask herself whether, in so doing, as he had not laid too great a strain on a temperament naturally exalted, and guarding against other tendencies as he had perhaps fostered in him too exclusively those qualities which circumstances had brought to an unusual development in herself. His enthusiasms and his disdains were alike too unqualified for that happy mien of character which is the best defense against the surprises of fortune. If as he had taught him to set an exaggerated value on ideal rewards, was not that, but a shifting of the danger point on which her fears had always hung? She trembled sometimes to think how little love, and a lifelong vigilance had availed in the deflecting of inherited tendencies. Her fears were in a measure confirmed by the first 2 years of their life in New York, and the opening of his career as a professional architect. Close on the easy triumphs of his studentships there came the chilling reaction of public indifference. Dick, on his return from Paris, had formed a partnership with an architect who had had several years of practical training in a New York office. But the quiet and industrious skill, though he attracted to the new firm a few small jobs which overflowed from the business of his former employer, was not able to infect the public with his own faith in Peyton's talents, and it was trying to a genius who felt himself capable of creating palaces, to have to restrict his efforts to the building of suburban cottages, or the planning of cheap alterations in private houses. Mrs. Peyton expended all the ingenuities of tenderness in keeping up her son's courage, and she was seconded in the task by a friend whose acquaintance Dick had made at the Beaux-Arts, and who, 2 years before the Peytons, had returned to New York to start on his own career as an architect. Paul Darrow was a young man full of crude seriousness, who, after a youth of struggling work and study in his native northwestern state, had won a scholarship which sent him abroad for a course at the Beaux-Arts. His 2 years there coincided with the first part of Dick's residence, and Darrow's gifts had at once attracted the younger student. Dick was unstinted in his admiration of rival talent, and Mrs. Peyton, who was romantically given to the cultivation of such generosities, had seconded his enthusiasm by the kindest offers of hospitality to the young student. Darrow thus became the grateful frequenter of their little salon, and after their return to New York the intimacy between the young men was renewed, though Mrs. Peyton found it more difficult to coax Dick's friend to her New York drawing room than to the informal surroundings of the Rue de Varennes. There, no doubt, secluded and absorbed in her son's work, as he had seemed to Darrow almost a fellow student, but seen among her own associates she became once more the woman of fashion, divided from him by the whole breadth of her ease and his awkwardness. Mrs. Peyton, whose tact had divined the cause of his estrangement, would not for an instant let it affect the friendship of the two young men. She encouraged Dick to frequent Darrow, in whom she divined a persistency of effort, an artistic self-confidence, in curious contrast to his social hesitancies. The example of his obstinate capacity for work was just the influence her son needed, and if Darrow would not come to them, she insisted that Dick must seek him out, must never let him think that any social discrepancy could affect a friendship based on deeper things. Dick, who had all the loyalties, and who took an honest pride in his friend's growing success, needed no urging to maintain the intimacy, and his copious reports of midnight colloquies in Darrow's lodgings showed Mrs. Peyton that as he had a strong ally in her invisible friend. It had been, therefore, somewhat of a shock to learn in the course of time that Darrow's influence was being shared, if not counteracted, by that of a young lady in whose honor Dick was now giving his first professional tea. Mrs. Payton had heard a great deal about Miss Clement's journey, first from the usual purveyors of such information, and more recently from her son, who, probably divining that rumor had been before him, adopted his usual method of disarming his mother by taking her into his confidence. But, ample as her information was, it remained perplexing and contradictory, and even her own few meetings with the girl had not helped her to a definite opinion. Miss Verney, in conduct and ideas, was patently of the new school. A young woman of feverish activities and broadcast judgments, whose very versatility made her hard to define. Mrs. Payton was shrewd enough to allow for the accidents of environment. What she wished to get at was the residuum of character beneath Miss Verney's shifting surface. It looks charmingly, Mrs. Payton repeated, giving a loosening touch to the chrysanthemums in a tall vase on her son's desk. Dick laughed and glanced at his watch. They won't be here for another quarter of an hour. I think I'll tell Gil to clean out the workroom before they come. Are we to see the drawings for the competition? His mother asked. He shook his head smilingly. See, and I've asked one or two of the Beaux-Arts fellows, you know, and besides, old Darrow's actually coming. Impossible, Mrs. Payton exclaimed. He swore he would last night. Dick laughed again, with a tinge of self-satisfaction. I've an idea he wants to see Miss Verney. Ah, his mother murmured. There was a pause, before she added, colon, has Darrow really gone in for this competition? Rather. I should say so. He's simply working himself to the bone. Mrs. Payton sat revolving her muff on a meditative hand. At length she said, colon, I'm not sure I think it quite nice of him. Her son halted before her with an incredulous stare. Mother, he exclaimed. The rebuke sent a blush to her forehead. Well, considering your friendship and everything. Everything? What do you mean by everything? The fact that he had more ability than I have and is therefore more likely to succeed? The fact that he needs the money and the success a deuced sight more than any of us? Is that the reason you think he oughtn't to have entered? Mother, I never heard you say an ungenerous thing before. The blush deepened to crimson, and she rose with a nervous laugh. It was ungenerous, she conceded. I suppose I'm jealous for you. I hate these competitions. Her son smiled reassuringly. Why you need? I'm not afraid. I think I shall pull it off this time. In fact, Paul's the only man I'm afraid of. I'm always afraid of Paul, but the mere fact that he's in the thing is a tremendous stimulus. His mother continued to study him with an anxious tenderness. Have you worked out the whole scheme? Do you see it yet? Oh, broadly, yes. There's a gap here and there, a hazy bit. Rather, it's the hardest problem I've ever had to tackle. But then it's my biggest opportunity, and I've simply got to pull it off. Mrs. Payton sat silent, considering his flushed face and illumined eye, which were rather those of the victor nearing the goal than of the runner just beginning the race. She remembered something that Darrow had once said of him, colon, Dick always sees the end too soon. You haven't too much time left, she murmured. Just a week. But I shan't go anywhere after this. I shall renounce the world. He glanced smilingly at the festal tea table and the embower desk. When I next appear, it will either be with my heel on Paul's neck, poor old Paul, or else being dragged lifeless from the arena. His mother nervously took up the laugh with which he ended. Oh, not lifeless, she said. His face clouded. Well, maimed for life, then, he muttered. Mrs. Payton made no answer. She knew how much hung on the possibility of his winning the competition which for weeks past had engrossed him. It was a design for the new Museum of Sculpture, for which the city had recently voted $500,000. Dick's taste ran naturally to the grandiose, and the erection of public buildings had always been the object of his ambition. He here was an unmatched opportunity, and he knew that, in a competition of the kind, the newest man had as much chance of success as the firm of most established reputation, since every competitor entered on his own merits, the designs being submitted to a jury of architects who voted on them without knowing the names of the contestants. Dick, characteristically, was not afraid of the older firms. Indeed, as he had told his mother, Paul Darrow was the only rival he feared. Mrs. Peyton knew that, to a certain point, self-confidence was a good sign, but somehow her sons did not strike her as being of the right substance. It seemed to have no dimension but extent. Her fears were complicated by a suspicion that, under his professional eagerness for success, lay the knowledge that Miss Verney's favor hung on the victory. It was that, perhaps, which gave a feverish touch to his ambition. And Mrs. Peyton, surveying the future from the height of her material apprehensions, divined that the situation depended mainly on the girl's view of it. She would have given a great deal to know Clemence Verney's conception of success. To Miss Verney, when she presently appeared, in the wake of the impersonal and exclamatory young married woman who served as a background to her vivid outline, seemed competent to impart at short notice any information required of her, as he had never struck Mrs. Peyton as more alert and efficient. A melting grace of line and color tempered her edges with the charming haze of youth. But it occurred to her critic that she might emerge from this morning mist as a dry and metallic old woman. If Miss Verney suspected a personal application in Dick's hospitality, it did not call forth in her the usual tokens of self-consciousness. Her manner may have been a shade more vivid than usual, but she preserved all her bright composure of glance and speech, so that one guessed, under the rapid dispersal of words, an undisturbed steadiness of perception. She was lavishly, but not indiscriminately interested in the evidences of her host's industry, and as the other guests assembled, straying with vague ejaculations through the labyrinth of scale drawings and blueprints, Mrs. Peyton noted that Miss Verney alone knew what these symbols stood for. To his visitor's requests to be shown his plans for the competition, Peyton had opposed a laughing refusal, enforced by the presence of two fellow architects, young men with lingering traces of the Beaux-Arts in their costume and vocabulary, who stood about in gaverny attitudes, and dazzled the ladies by allusions to fenestration and entasis. The party had already drifted back to the tea table, when a hesitating knock announced Darrow's approach. He entered with his usual air of having blundered in by mistake, embarrassed by his hat and greatcoat, and thrown into deeper confusion by the necessity of being introduced to the ladies grouped about the urn. To the men he threw a gruff nod of fellowship, and Dick having relieved him of his encumbrances, he retreated behind the shelter of Mrs. Peyton's welcome. The latter judiciously gave him time to recover, and when she turned to him, he was engaged in a surreptitious inspection of Miss Verney, whose dusky slenderness, relieved against the bare walls of the office, made her look like a young St. John of Donatello's. The girl returned his look with one of her clear glances, and the group having presently broken up again, Mrs. Peyton saw that as he had drifted to Darrow's side. The visitors at length wandered back to the workroom to see a portfolio of Dick's watercolors, but Mrs. Peyton remained seated behind the urn, listening to the interchange of talk through the open door, while she tried to coordinate her impressions. She saw that Miss Verney was sincerely interested in Dick's work. It was the nature of her interest that remained in doubt. As if to solve this doubt, the girl presently reappeared alone on the threshold, and discovering Mrs. Peyton, advanced toward her with a smile. "Are you tired of hearing us praise Mr. Peyton's things?" she asked, dropping into a low chair beside her hostess. "You unintelligent admiration must be a bore to people who know, and Mr. Darrow tells me you are almost as learned as your son." Mrs. Peyton returned the smile, but evaded the question. I should be sorry to think your admiration unintelligent," she said. I like to feel that my boy's work is appreciated by people who understand it. Oh, I have the usual smattering, said Miss Verney carelessly. I think I know why I admire his work, but then I am sure I see more in it when someone like Mr. Darrow tells me how remarkable it is. Does Mr. Darrow say that? The mother exclaimed, losing sight of her object in the rush of maternal pleasure. He has said nothing else. It seems to be the only subject which loosens his tongue. I believe he is more anxious to have your son win the competition than to win it himself. He is a very good friend, Mrs. Peyton assented. She was struck by the way in which the girl led the topic back to the special application of it which interested her. As he had none of the artifices of prudery. He feels sure that Mr. Peyton will win, Miss Verney continued. It was very interesting to hear his reasons. He is an extraordinarily interesting man. It must be a tremendous incentive to have such a friend. Mrs. Peyton hesitated. Tea, the friendship is delightful, but I don't know that my son needs the incentive. He is almost too ambitious. Miss Verney looked up brightly. See, can one be? She said. Ambition is so splendid. It must be so glorious to be a man, and go crashing through obstacles, straight up to the thing one is after. I'm afraid I don't care for people who are superior to success. I like marriage by capture. She rose with her wandering laugh, and stood flushed and sparkling above Mrs. Peyton, who continued to gaze at her gravely. What do you call success? The latter asked. It means so many different things. Oh, yes, I know the inward approval, and all that. Well, I'm afraid I like the other kind. The drums and wreaths and acclamations. If I were Mr. Peyton, for instance, I'd much rather win the competition than be as disinterested as Mr. Darrow. Mrs. Peyton smiled. I hope you won't tell him so, she said half seriously. He is overstimulated already, and he is so easily influenced by anyone whose opinion he values. She stopped abruptly, hearing herself, with a strange inward shock, re-echo the words which another man's mother had once spoken to her. Miss Verney did not seem to take the allusion to herself, for she continued to fix on Mrs. Peyton a gaze of impartial sympathy. But we can't help being interested, she declared. It's very kind of you, but I wish you would all help him to feel that his competition is after all of very little account compared with other things, his health and his peace of mind, for instance. He is looking horribly used up. The girl glanced over her shoulder at Dick, who was just re-entering the room at Darrow's side. Oh, do you think so? She said. I should have thought it was his friend who was used up. Mrs. Peyton followed the glance with surprise. As he had been too preoccupied to notice Darrow, whose crudely modeled face was always of a dull pallor, to which his slow-moving gray eye lent no relief except in rare moments of expansion. Now the face had the fallen lines of a death mask, in which only the smile he turned on Dick remained alive, and the sight smote her with compunction. Poor Darrow. He did look horribly fagged out. As if he needed care and petting and good food. No one knew exactly how he lived. His rooms, according to Dick's report, were fireless and ill-kept, but he stuck to them because his landlady, whom he had fished out of some financial plight, had difficulty in obtaining other lodgers. He belonged to no clubs, and wandered out alone for his meals, mysteriously refusing the hospitality which his friends pressed on him. It was plain that he was very poor, and Dick conjectured that he sent what he earned to an aunt in his native village, but he was so silent about such matters that, outside of his Gutenberg edition, end of chapter.